sports history fans. I'm Ross from the podcast Pigskin Tales. You're about to jump into another thrilling sports history moment, but first, let's dive into today's sponsor, just in time for the holiday season. Introducing Art of Words, the brainchild of word artist Dan Duffy from Philadelphia. Dan meticulously crafts stunning images by handwriting relevant words from some of the greatest sports moments in time. These unique, budget-friendly illustrations are the perfect gift, sparking cherished memories and capturing hearts. Choose from city skylines, sports, history, and musicians to find a piece for everyone. And here's the exciting part. For that sports fanatic in your life, gift them a piece of their favorite team or player's history. Art of Words tells a compelling story. Explore collegiate stadiums, each meticulously crafted with every football victory etched into words. Or venture into baseball stadiums, handwritten with every player from the team's illustrious history. My favorite on the site is Bryce Harper 2021 MVP year. Because I'm a big stats guy, I think that's one of the coolest things ever. Check it out. Don't wait. Order a print today for yourself and your loved one this holiday season. Transform your wall into a gallery of captivating art and surprise your family and friends with a print of their own. Use code SHN15 at artofwords.com for a 15% discount on your order in November and December. Visit Art of Words, where words magically transform into stunning art, evoking cherished memories and touching the hearts of those who you care about. Again, use the code SHN15 for 15% off at artofwords.com.
The last couple weeks of January for a football fan who loves history are filled with Pro Bowl games and All-Star games. But we had a Super Bowl that looked like an All-Star game, and that was Super Bowl 13 between the Steelers and the Dallas Cowboys. We're going to talk about all the stars of that game and more in just a moment.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Aaron Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome to the Pig Pen, where we will talk about the football history headlines in this episode for January 21st. And to get right at it, we'll start off January 21st, 1949. According to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, this marks the day that the New York Bulldogs and New York Yanks franchise started. As we alluded to in our January 19th post, the Yanks really got their league start in 1945 when the Brooklyn team reassembled the Yanks franchise that left the NFL in the mid-1940s and went to the All-American Football Conference. They played as the AAFC's Boston Yanks for three seasons, from 1946 through 1948. In 1949, the franchise changed homes again and returned to the Big Apple and became the New York Bulldogs and played at the Polo Grounds along with the New York Giants. The 1950 season had the Bulldogs change their name back to the Yanks, and later in 1952, the NFL purchased the Yanks from owner Ted Collins. January 21st, 1967, the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. The results of the 6th AFL All-Star Game were that the Eastern Division knocked off the Western Division 30-23. According to the RememberTheAFL.com website, the game's MVPs were Babe Parilli, the quarterback of the Boston Patriots, and the great defensive end of the New York Jets, Verlin Biggs. January 21st, 1968, the Gator Bowl in Jacksonville, Florida. The Eastern Division of the AFL must have liked playing on January 21st because at the 7th AFL All-Star Game, the Eastern Division once again got one over on their Western Division rivals by the score of 25-24, per the RememberTheAFL.com. A couple of New York Jets were voted as the offensive most valuable players, as quarterback Joe Namath and Don Maynard shared the spotlight, and the defensive MVP of the game was Speedy Duncan of the LA Chargers, who played defensive back and also returned kicks. Now, Duncan muffed an early punt that the West recovered and later scored on, but his 90-yard kickoff return later in the game more than made up for it and gave him that MVP honor. That same day in 1968, the NFL Pro Bowl was played at the LA Coliseum. According to the American Football Database, it was won by the Western Division as they outscored their Eastern counterparts 38-20. Otto Graham, the coach of Washington, was coaching the East team while he was matching wits with the Colts' Don Shula. Graham took some heat for his players when he benched quarterback Fran Tarkington in the fourth quarter because who Tarkington was at the time to football, and the game was a charity exhibition. The most valuable players of the game were Gale Sayers of the Chicago Bears and Green Bay's Dave Robinson. The MVP honor was the second season in a row that Sayers had earned it. Let's jump forward into the 70s now. January 21st, 1973, at Texas Stadium in Irving, Texas, the 23rd NFL Pro Bowl. Story was covered once again by the American Football Database. In the contest, the Steelers' Chuck Knoll coached the AFC and faced the man in the fedora, Tom Landry, who was coaching the NFC. We'll talk more about that coaching matchup in a second. The AFC edged out the NFC 33-28. The game's MVP was O.J. Simpson, the running back of the Buffalo Bills. The winners of the game cashed out at $2,000 per man, while the NFC players got $1,500 each in the loss. And now the big one, January 21st, 1979, at Miami's Orange Bowl in Miami, Florida. Super Bowl XIII may be one of the greatest NFL championships ever played, according to the 247sports.com article. The two top teams of the era squared off, with Hall of Fame coaches Tom Landry on the Dallas Cowboys sideline, while the Pittsburgh Steelers strategist was Chuck Knoll. The game was heavily hyped in the buildup of the game, and it really lived up to everyone's expectation and probably surpassed it. The game was a rematch of Super Bowl X, played 3 years earlier, where the Steelers had won 21-17. The game still has a standing record of 19 future Pro Bowl Hall of Famers who were at the game on the sidelines. It was Knoll, Landry, Tex Schramm, the general manager of the Cowboys, Pittsburgh's owners, Art and Dan Rooney, and the assistant coaches for Dallas were Mike Ditka and Ernie Stotner, a former Steeler, by the way. Part of the pregame hype was Thomas Hollywood Henderson mocking Terry Bradshaw's intelligence, and this enraged many of the Steeler players. Henderson even came into the game and had a big hit on TB that caused a fumble, resulting in Dallas's only lead, but the blonde bomber overcame his three turnovers in the first half to have a great second half. He put throws on receivers to Lynn Swann and John Stallworth, who were both over 100 yards on the day receiving. That was a Super Bowl record first for having two men over 100 yards receiving on the same team. Dallas had his chance at the end, but tight end Jackie Smith dropped a wide-open, sure touchdown pass in the end zone with the Cowboys facing 3rd-and-3 from the Steelers' 10-yard line in the third quarter, and Dallas had to kick a field goal. The Pittsburgh Steelers were victorious in the game over the Dallas Cowboys, 35-31. The game's MVP was Terry Bradshaw. One final note is that that was the final Super Bowl ever played at the Orange Bowl. Five of the first 13 Super Bowls were played there, including the first matchup of these two teams in Super Bowl X, and also the great Jets versus Colts game in Super Bowl III. January 21st, 1992, Bill Cowher is announced as the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, becoming only the second head coach of this team since 1970. He replaced the legend Chuck Knoll, who had stepped down after 23 seasons at the helm. January 21st, 2007, at the RCA Dome in Indianapolis, the ProFootballReference.com states that the AFC Championship game, the Indianapolis Colts outlasted the New England Patriots 38-34. Running back Joseph Addai completed a late Colts go-ahead drive at the one-minute mark of the fourth quarter in this classic Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady contest. January 21st, 2007. In the other side of the league, the NFC Championship game was played at Soldier Field in Chicago. The ProFootballReference.com lists the Chicago Bears beating up on the New Orleans Saints 39-14 to advance to Super Bowl 41. January 21st, 2018, the NFC Championship was played at Lincoln Field in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Eagles defeated the Minnesota Vikings 38-7. On the AFC side on that same day of 2018, at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, the New England Patriots beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 24-20. Now let's take a quick break from our headlines, and let me remind you, you can learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com. And you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone who's here, is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message just for you.
Hello, sports fans. My name is Mark Mortier, and my show is called Yesterday Sports. My show mainly focuses on old school sports from the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. I'm a member of the Pro Football Researchers Association and a sports historian. I have a podcast every other Tuesday, so come join us at the Sports History Network for a trip down memory lane.
That podcast is definitely a good one you don't want to miss there. Let's talk about some birthdays of Hall of Famers now for this January 21st, and we'll start off in the year 1901 in Bell Buckle, Tennessee. Lynn Bomar, the end from Vanderbilt, was born. Bomar was one of the very first Southern players to make it on Walter Camp's All-America team, according to the NFF. In his first season of 1921, the team went undefeated, and at the game against Georgia, Bomar was credited with saving five touchdowns with his play from the linebacker position. In 1922, he found his offensive groove as he teamed up with quarterback and future Hall of Fame coach Jess Neely to form a passing combination that led to a second consecutive unbeaten season. In 1923, he and fellow Vandy end Heck Wakefield were both listed as All-Americans on Walter Camp's list. The National Football Foundation selected Lynn Bomar to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in 1956. January 21st, 1925, Chicago, Illinois. Holy Cross and Notre Dame lineman George Connor arrived into this life. Irish coach Frank Leahy claimed that Connor was one of the best blockers he had ever seen. The NFF states that during Connor's two seasons as an Irish uniform, he never played in a losing game. Connor played 8 years with the Chicago Bears and was an All-Pro and was an All-NFL five times. George Connor was voted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1975, and he also is in the College Football Hall of Fame. January 21st, 1957, Pasadena, Texas. Jacob Green, the fine Texas A&M defensive lineman, was born. The National Football Foundation selected Jacob Green into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2019. January 21st, 1975, Wichita Falls, Texas. Aaron Taylor, the former Nebraska offensive lineman, was born. The National Football Foundation voters selected Aaron Taylor to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2018. We're certainly appreciative that you joined us again today on the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and we're on here every day. We are a daily podcast, and we talk about football history every day of the year, and we would like you to join us at least most of those days, because we have a good 10 to 15 minutes of your daily commute or your daily listen or that quiet time or times you just want to catch up on that football history. We have it for you, and we are found on your favorite podcast supplier, or you can go to pigskindispatch.com. We post every day's podcast there, or go to the sportshistorynetwork.com, where you can see our podcast and many of our other partners' podcasts that talk about sports history. A lot of them are football. There's baseball, hockey, just about everything, weightlifting. You can talk about all those with our great podcast celebrities and their guests that they have on there, and I think it's something you'll really enjoy. That's at sportshistorynetwork.com. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network. your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Have you ever noticed that the lower jaw is not protected in sports? Did you know that 10,800 concussions will happen today? This has been an upward trend for the past 50 years. I'm Dr. Michael Hutchison, a practicing neuromuscular dentist. When my son wanted to participate in football and rugby, I was afraid he was going to get a concussion. That fear led me to finding the missing link to reducing concussions. The fact is, the only part of the skull that is not protected in sports is the lower jaw. If you want to drastically reduce concussions, there are three basic jaw positions that affect concussions, and two of them are not good. The correct one is called physiologic jaw position. It will dissipate the force away from the brain. Knowing that, I designed an appliance that put my son's jaw in the right place, and as a result, he was concussion-free from fifth grade all the way to senior year. This jaw position takes those 10,800 concussions today down to 28. It's the key to concussion protection. As a parent, this is what you need to know. It's extremely important that the device you are using is on the lower jaw. Thickness of the device is important. Most importantly, it must position and hold you in your own unique personal physiologic jaw position. So if your child goes out on the field with the correct jaw position, your son or daughter will not one of those 10,800 concussions today. Get yours today at powerplusmouthguard.com. Use the promo code POWERUP2023 for 10% off.